This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Jason here. Part two conversation, Dr. April Kemp from Southeastern Louisiana University. Dr. April, are you ready to talk about persuasion and sales processes?
I'm ready. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's do this. Now, one of the things for the audience, just so you know, behind the scenes podcast stuff is always fun. We ended part one, had a gap, had a break, started talking, almost didn't even make it to this part of the conversation. I might even share some of that content we talked about because we were on a roll. One of the big things, and I think this leads into a great segue, maybe weird, but it's a great segue, at least in my head, is one of the things I told you in between on the break was I appreciated how great you were as a guest in that first part because your answers were so short. You're not necessarily short from a timeline, but like a very succinct. I talk to a lot of people, and sometimes people have very long answers that are valuable, and sometimes people have very long answers that are very, like, they go on. They're using 500 words when they could use 100 words. I have a lot of clients and know a lot of salespeople who use 1,000 words when they could have used 10. And I appreciate the fact that you were just very focused. And so I think that's a great place to start in this sales process and why that is so important to, you know, say what you need to say, but it also jumps off of where we left it last time with the show up and throw up that salespeople do where they talk too much instead of listening. How do you help salespeople limit that and be succinct? And two parts here, how do you build sales processes or what sales process do you like to teach that supports that model of talking less and listening more?
Yeah, I think it's really important. We talked about in the first session about that showing up and throwing up. And as new salespeople, a lot of my students that are going to go into sales, I know that's a challenge because they get so excited about learning their product and they know they have a great product and they want to tell you all about it, but that's not the best approach. And so we really focus on Neil Rackham's consultative approach, the spin selling process. And what that is, if you've never heard of it, and there's lots of different types of processes, but what we found is that if you look at it from a consultation, you're a doctor, you're trying to find out what the problems are from the patient and be able to do a good job of asking the right types of questions and listening, because listening is so important, especially when you're getting to know that potential customer and building that relationship, then you're going to be more effective. And so the spin is the situation, asking the situation questions, the problem questions, implication, and need payoff. And what I will tell you, what separates the okay students, they'll usually get the process. You know, I teach them well enough and I'm like, literally, here are the types of questions for each phase of the process. They really can't go wrong. I even give them like a sample script, like here's what you do. But what separates the good students from the great students is a lot of times what will happen is they'll hear a problem and guess what they want to do? They want to prescribe that solution right then and there. But what I will tell them is stop. Okay. At this point, that's exciting. Write it down, but keep asking questions because at that point, there are probably some other pain points, some other challenges that are there that you have not uncovered yet. And not only that, that customer may not even realize that they're problems until they say it out loud. So if you're listening, you're taking good notes, you're repeating back, okay, here's the situation that I'm hearing. Is there anything else going on? If you're asking the right types of questions, and then from there, getting them to understand, well, what would happen if you didn't fix those problems? Sometimes they've never said it out loud to anyone because if they say that they're having problems to their team, then it makes them look like they're inefficient, right? And that something's going on. But if they're able to sit there and reflect to you and be able to sit there and have a good conversation, you're going to get so much valuable information that they're going to give to you if you're asking good questions. And if they're sitting there being able to share what their pain points are and you're diving deeper into the conversation, they're ultimately going to want to hear what you have to say at that point if you have a solution that fixes their problems. But that challenge comes into play with the inexperienced students who are like, yeah, you're a problem. I want to fix it right then and there. But really, there are usually other challenges that they're faced with.
And so going back to when you were in sales, kind of going through different industries, not really thinking you were in sales, but obviously you were in sales. Did you have a process that you followed? Had anyone taught you a process? Was it intuitive? How did that line up to what you now teach students? Well, just talk about that.
I think each company kind of had their own training processes, but I don't know that it was such a process that I could follow every time. And if you're asking the right questions in the right order, you're setting yourself up for the right type of conversation. So I think looking back on my conversations before that, I probably didn't do as good of a job with interacting with customers, asking the right types of questions. Did I ask questions? Yeah, of course. But was I asking the right types of open-ended, diving deeper questions? Probably not. And so I can share that experience with my students and say, look, it's okay. You're going to always be learning. And we should always be learning. I learn every day. But what I can reflect back on in my earlier career is I probably wasn't asking the right types of questions. And that's so important.
I'm going to guess that you were asking more like product specific, product focused questions instead of open-ended questions, like looking for how your product was a solution for them, no matter what.
Absolutely. And I also probably wasn't thinking as much from their perspective as a customer. And that's where my shift has happened for me. And when I teach students how to look at it, I mentioned in the first segment, you've got to understand where they're coming from. And so, yes, I would say probably in my early career, I was thinking more, what do you need? When do you need it? More from an order taker perspective. But now if you think of it from a consultative approach, you're thinking from the doctor, okay, what are your challenges? What are, you know, what is it that's keeping you from meeting your goals? You know, thinking from the right type of questioning, you know, perspective, that's where my mindset is now.
What, when we talk about the buyers, potential buyers, what do you think they want from a sales process in this day and age? It's 2023, obviously different than, you know, when you were in sales, you know, starting off in sales. We even talked about how marketing is so different before we started recording. What do you think buyers want?
You know, from what I'm hearing from students who are out there working in the field, they want salespeople who are going to be there for them when they need them. They want people who are going to listen to their challenges, see where they're coming from, their perspective, because every situation's unique, be able to listen and help them to meet their goals. And so, I mean, it seems pretty straightforward, but they also said there are salespeople not meeting those needs. So I think if you break it down to what's important to them as the buyer and their business and continually showing up, because a lot of people don't follow up and show up, then if you keep showing up and if you're consistent and you built that relationship and built that trust, then they're more likely to continue doing business with you. So it's still a relationship business that we're in sales.
Yeah. And so thinking about the spin process, specifically the problem focus, when somebody has a problem, whether they've identified it or not, what would, you know, the buyer side, what have you seen or what do you think keeps them from buying and moving forward? Why would they not want to move forward?
There's always the common reasons, whether it be the price or it be maybe that they don't see the value of the product. And there's really just a few different categories of things, the timeline to implement, or, you know, maybe it's just they don't understand what you're selling. So what we'll train students on is to ask more questions about that, you know, objection. Welcome objections. Objections are great because you can understand what their mindset is versus someone who just tries to put you off. You don't really know why they're not, you know, answering your follow-up calls or emails and such. So that objection is great. Look, what is it about the pricing? And maybe it's that they just don't understand what you presented, and you can present it in a different way and say, look, well, we have this payment plan option that sounds like it would be a better fit. If that's the challenge for you is paying all of it up front right now, then here's how we can break it down for you and be a better fit. So if you can ask more questions related to the objection, then there might be a way to alleviate that concern and be able to move forward in the process.
So, and what have you found as a good way to help the students, the future salespeople, kind of understand these processes, learn these processes, especially because they're going to go out in the world and work in an industry and different industries, right? So you kind of have to cover everything. So it's got to be general, but also specific. So how do you tackle that in the classes?
Sure. So we do role plays. And I think, you know, even if you go out and work in sales, you're going to do role plays. I have students that still, you know, reach out to me, they text me and say, I'm so glad we did role plays because I'm doing it now and I'm killing it because I'm used to it, you know. And we do sales competitions because we want to put them in that situation where they do have to work through a situation where they may not know exactly what they're going to say, you know, that anything could happen. The objection could be anything. Their situation could be totally different than what you thought walking in. So putting them in these situations where they have to be adaptive and really think on the spot and ask good questions and ask follow-up questions, then it's putting them in that mindset of being able to be adaptive and think through the process more than just a script where they say these things and they should get this result. It is different. And, you know, some people are going to be stronger than others, but the more you do it, you're going to get better. Just like with riding a bike, you've got to get in there, have conversations. And the cool thing is we have an intro class and we have advanced class for students who want to continue building their skill set. If they go into our advanced class, they're going to compete and they're going to be able to sit down with their peers, but also professionals. We get to come in to be the buyers, the judges, their mentors, to give them that feedback that's going to elevate their skill set and be able to get them to that next level.
And so one of the things I know is that so many people in sales do not like role playing. And I know that a lot of people end up in sales because they just end up in sales, but they don't come from obviously a background of higher education, sales classes, and then role playing and kind of like working through that and appreciating practice, right? Kind of like an athlete who appreciates practice because they know that that's what helps them in the game. What do you see with that, with people who don't like role playing, or are the people who in these sales classes, like they're the kind of person who likes role playing? Where do you see that in the student level?
I think that they enjoy the competitive piece. So because we make it into the competition, there's a potential reward if you work hard, just like within in sales. So I think if companies look at it from that perspective, maybe they can reward some of their salespeople who do a good job in their role plays. I know one company that we partner with, they get their salespeople to record role play videos and submit them and get feedback. You know, if there's a way to make anything with salespeople competitive, maybe reward people who are doing a good job with role plays, then I would say maybe they might have a different result. But the students who work hard and do well in the competitions and they go on and work in sales, they text me all the time, like, thank you for making us do role plays, because I'm well ahead of my peers who have never done role plays coming into this role.
Yeah, that's so funny. Again, I'm just thinking about how many times I've sat down with a group of salespeople of any size, and people just don't want to role play, don't want to role play in front of other people, don't want to screw up, maybe don't want to look bad. It's kind of like public speaking, but interactive. Feeling dangerous. And I could just imagine then one of your students who has experience and has built the confidence up and appreciates the value of role play and has a different attachment to it, entering into a team of people who maybe they're not used to it and they don't want to do it. The, I just let me show up and do what I do best. I don't need to practice type of people. Yeah. And do you see any of those in your groups as well? The ones who are like, yeah, I don't need to practice. Like, I'm already in sales and I know what I'm doing.
Well, and sometimes they just don't want to practice. A lot of times they just talk the game and they don't want to actually do the action, or they'll sit in there and talk through what they're going to do and then they just don't do it. So I have to sometimes say, all right, I'm about to press record. You need to get your, because I make them record. You got to go back and watch yourself too. It's not just about the act of doing a role play. You've got to look at yourself and see how you come across, because that's a whole nother level of feedback and being able to improve. So sometimes I'll say, all right, I'm about to press record. You need to go through the process. And I kind of have to just push them in and make them do it. And when they do it, they're like, okay, that wasn't that big of a deal. You know, I think sometimes they get kind of frustrated and worked up. They're not really sure, just like with anything, of what to expect, but I just do it that first time and they're like, okay, well, it's not that big of a deal. Let me do it again. So that repetition piece is going to help them build their confidence.
And do you see with those kind of people where it's more that they're analytical and they're overthinking it and they're worried, or they don't see the value in it because they already think they know it all?
You're right. You're tying into those social styles. So yeah, the analyticals, a lot of times they just think too much about what they're going to do versus actually doing. The expressives usually have no problem jumping in and they're the first ones to record and they're totally happy with looking at themselves. Whereas, you know, those analyticals, yeah, they're going to think too much about it. And so you sometimes just have to make them do it. And then once they do it, they were actually very prepared, probably more prepared than us expressives, to be honest. And they do fine. But it's that repetition piece. You're going to have to keep getting them to do it. And they're going to get better and they're going to build that confidence.
Well, and the reason why I bring this up, and I think this is fascinating, even though this is the process, the conversation about sales process and persuasion, is for salespeople out there who are listening to this, or even managers or leaders listening to this, looking at the different types of people, the social styles and the behaviors and personalities that you have on your team, and what works well and what's going to go with your flow and what you want from the team, who's going to fight you on it. And then ultimately, you know, how do you hire for what you want to hire for? Not that you want everyone to be the exact same, but understanding who you're hiring, what you're hiring for, what works best in the role. And then, you know, is somebody also going to be open to change? When it comes to sales and persuasion, one of the things that people sometimes say is persuasion is like manipulation. It just sounds nicer. Like, in your experience, where's that line between manipulation and persuasion?
I think that's a great question. And that's probably why sometimes sales gets a bad rap. It's because some people feel like it's manipulation. But if you really shift that focus to a persuasion mindset, it's more about understanding it's kind of the common theme of what we've been talking about today, is understanding where that customer's coming from. What are their pain points? What are their challenges? And if you're able to provide a solution that's going to improve their business and make what they do better, then to me, that's persuasion. And it's really not something that's that complicated. If you think about it, it's meeting their needs, but it's not easy to do. The sales process is not easy to do, and it's not a one conversation oftentimes. And so it can be very complicated. And, you know, if you shift that focus from that of manipulation, it's not manipulation. At the end of the day, we're helping people. If you look at sales as helping people, and that's the type of persuasion you're having, then you should have a different mindset when you leave and close a deal, because you're helping someone improve their business.
I love it. I think that's so true. And I think that's so valuable, especially from the customer perspective. One of the big things that, you know, you keep talking about is from their perspective. We talked about it in part one, you know, even from a marketing side, which is them being the hero and them being, you know, the one that this is focused on, especially through the storytelling. So last question about this, going back to your marketing side and all that you're doing on that, when we look at the sales process, how have you seen effective marketing, and whatever falls under marketing, right? Because there's so many different things that do that lead to an effective sales process and sales conversation?
Yeah. So I would say, as salespeople, we need to be more open to creating content, posting on LinkedIn, because that's where we can share stories. If you're not active, people are looking for information earlier in the sales process, and the buyers are savvy. They're able to search for information. We have our phones at our fingertips. So if they're having a problem, they're going to go look for solutions. And if you're connected to the right network of people, and if you're putting out really great content that shows you as an expert in that area, then people are more likely to find you and look to you for solutions. If you're non-existent and they, you know, aren't seeing that information, obviously you're less likely to be for someone to reach out to help fix their problem. And so, you know, I think that's that whole social selling mindset and content creation is, you know, it's okay to talk about what types of, you know, success stories you have and those customers and what they improve because of working with you and your company. And you shouldn't see it as bragging. You should see that as an opportunity to put out there, you know, options to help other people.
I love it. It's so valuable. And I think what's interesting, anybody watching this or listening to this, check your marketing, check what you're doing on LinkedIn. If you're an individual contributor, you're a salesperson, look at it. Are you posting anything? Keep in mind that everybody is going to research you and your company. Just assume that either before your first conversation with them, or if they just talk to you for the first time between now and their second conversation with you, just always assume they're going to research you and your company and look at what's on there.
Can I make a comment about that too?
Yes, please.
When I was doing my research and had some interviews with some salespeople, there are lots of corporate companies who are putting out content, but it's not authentic content. It's very, you could tell that the corporate headquarters created the content, if that makes sense. So it's very, you know, corporate. From their website, they're sharing something that their corporate headquarters said put out, but does it say anything about the person that's sharing the content? So creating authentic content that you've created, I think, is even more taking it to the next level instead of just taking the information. And I know sometimes you're in industries where you got to be very careful with the type of information. So I'm not saying everyone, this isn't a blanket statement, but if you're able to create, you know, unique content to you, your business, your location, then that's going to resonate more with people than just this corporate content that you're sharing. So there's a difference between sharing information that you're putting out something with authentic content that allows people to get to know you, your personality, your company, and what you have to offer.
Yeah. And I think there's so much that goes into that as far as what does the company believe? You know, what are the mission, vision, core values? What do you want clients to think about the company and feel about the company? And then you as a salesperson, as an extension of that, you know, and I could just imagine and have seen those big corporate type of marketing machines where they're pumping out corporate stuff and it's just all me as far as a company goes. And it's like, but why should anybody care? And they just assume that everyone cares because they're just in that mode, which is the other part that I would challenge anyone watching or listening to this. If you're running a company or you're in charge of marketing or anything that's public facing, is what does your website look like? And or what does your content look like? Because I promise most websites out there, especially in the B2B world and in the SaaS world, it's all about we're great, we're amazing, we have this many clients, this is what we do. That's all it is. And it's very me focused versus like you were talking about part one with storytelling and them being the hero. Like nobody cares about your company, they care about themselves first. And I love that you're talking about that authentic content.
And also there, a lot of times the content's not focused on fixing problems. So we Google things, we're trying to find a solution. And so a lot of times that content is not set up that way on websites for people to find you. So make sure, you know, as you're creating the content and updating the information, the stories are one piece of it, but also allow people to find you by providing that information that can help them fix their problems.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing to take away from this, you know, in that respect, is that you're running a company, you own a company, you're selling, whatever it might be on the job business side. In the rest of your life, you're a customer. So how do you act as a customer and a person? When you have a problem in your personal life, like how do I change the headlight bulb in my car, right? How do you put that into a search? What do you look for? What resonates? And then what do you go after? right? What's interesting is how many people, when they become business people or that part of their life, they're only thinking about themselves and they're not thinking about that potential customer journey. So I love what you're talking about. Like if someone were to search, they have a problem, they search it as a problem, will they find you? Which makes me think, I think I've done a good job on my site, but I want to check it and make sure it's even more in line from a like searching standpoint. How do I X, Y, and Z? It's like, will this resonate with them about them first versus me first?
Absolutely.
I think that's great. Well, I appreciate you again, Dr. April, for being here and sharing all this, this part two, as we close this out, talking about persuasion, sales process. So fun. For people who want to connect with you online, they can do it via LinkedIn, April Field Kemp. The link will be in the show notes. They can also find the program for the university, which is southeastern.edu/sales. See, I said I would get it right by now. And so that will also be in the show notes, as well as any other information from your side. Again, Dr. April, thank you for being here. And for, again, I thank all my guests for this, but I truly mean it. I appreciate what you're doing to help the future salespeople with their sales processes, with persuasion, with doing things different, with focusing on the buyers more than the salespeople, and how much that just makes a difference. So thank you for that and for being here.
Thank you.
All right. And for everyone tuning in, hopefully you got some value. Hopefully you're going to change things. Like I'm thinking about, what do I need to change on my website, even some of my content? And I focus on this all the time. And I'm, you know, always wanting to grow and learn and see things from a different perspective. Hopefully this helps you shift the way that you sell and building a process that's focused on the other person, not just yourself. And stay tuned. Part three, we're going to talk about the future of sales. And until then, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.